This is Jim Inkster, and coming today on the show, we are slated to hear from John Kennedy, the state treasurer. He has some thoughts to share regarding the governor's tax reform proposal. Looks like Governor Jindal will push for the abolition of the state income tax and perhaps corporate taxes, and the trade-off is a big hike in sales taxes. If this happens, what will the landscape be like? We'll talk with John Kennedy, former revenue secretary as well, so he has certain expertise in this area that should be fascinating to hear. Also, Ara Rubion on the Jewish Film Festival coming to Baton Rouge this week. And Leo Honeycutt, the biographer of Edwin Washington Edwards, who manages to stay in the news. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it is 877-217-5757. And you may reach us via email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. We begin with Leo Honeycutt, the veteran journalist and author of renown, who has penned, according to his publisher, Jim Brown, the most purchased book ever published in Louisiana, the authorized biography of Edwin Edwards. Now, first of all, it was authorized. So,
yeah.
So he read every word, and I'm sure there were a few words he didn't want in the book.
Well, there was a ton of words he didn't want in the book. We fought the whole last 2 years over the trial chapter. In fact, there was a moment or two when I thought I was just going to walk away from the project, throw it away, and say, here, if you think you can do it, do it.
But he's now in a reality show in which
well, Jim,
I doubt that he's calling the shots.
I don't know. I would say probably Trina's calling the shots since they're calling it the governor's wife.
I'm told they even got him to put on a prison jumpsuit the other day for the reality show.
Well, he didn't tell me that, so I don't know that to be certain, but somehow that would fit, wouldn't it?
Well, does this have the danger of making him a buffoon?
Yes. Have you seen a reality show yet that didn't make somebody a buffoon?
Well, why would he do it?
You know, why would he do it? That's a good question. Next time we get him on the show, why don't you ask him that direct question?
Well,
because I did try to talk him out of it. There's no such thing as a reality show. Anytime you poke a camera in somebody's face or put it in their bedroom or their house or kitchen or whatever, and it stays there for a year and a half, there's nothing real about that. Even when you poke a camera in a politician's face, he's playing to the camera. If it's not something he really wants to talk about, he runs from the camera. Otherwise, it's like a homing device. So there is no such thing as a reality show when you have a television camera in your face.
Well, and he's a man who's accustomed to having television cameras in his face, but in his home, well, I guess he had cameras in his home and he didn't know about it.
Whole different issue.
That was a
now,
different.
Maybe that was a reality show. I don't know. But and I think they since sold that house in Country Club.
Yes, but the show, The Governor's Wife, will make its debut on February the 27th, I'm told.
Yep.
So it'll be one day short of the 30th anniversary of the MASH episode that garnered more viewers than any episode in the history of television other than Super Bowls. And
well, this might break that record.
It might break that record.
At least in Louisiana.
I'm sure people will be watching, but will it have staying power?
Well, you know, it really depends on how and how real people perceive that Trina primarily acts. Everybody already knows what to expect from Edwin Edwards. And I will say that in their defense, the production company that's done this for A&E, which, by the way, is basically Louisiana-based, has figured out that Edwin Edwards, even at 85 years old, can still pop out one-liners like Bob Hope. And for those of you who don't remember Bob Hope, he was a comedian prior to Seinfeld. But he was very, very good at politics and at one-liners, and Edwin Edwards is probably the best, now that I think about it, probably the best comedic politician this country may have ever seen.
He definitely could throw out the one-liners and still can at 85. And he's fathering a child. DeLeo, I think, is bound to secrecy on this, but I'm not. And the word is that Trina, age 33. He's 84.
I know there's like 52 years difference between their ages.
Yeah. Well, she's going to have a baby, and this one may be Edwin II. He'll be 86 by the time the child is born. Just eight years short of the Guinness Book of Records, by the way.
No kidding.
94 is the record. So he's doing well.
You can learn so much on this show, Jim, just being with you.
Well, he's doing well, and this is a man who has spent one out of every 10 days in his life in prison.
Yeah, well, and he came through it, didn't he? You know, there was a time when he felt like that he was going to be carried out feet first, and that what Judge Polozola gave him was a death sentence. And going back to that particular thing, you know, it is interesting still. I find it interesting that Judge Polozola was able to just because he wanted to double the sentence off the prescription. There were prescriptions back then when he was sentenced.
Is the governor bitter about that?
What do you think?
Well, I think most people would be bitter, but Edwin Edwards is a different. He tends to fly above the masses.
That's right. He has perfected that. But there are certain things that still get to him, and if I ever want to hit a hot button, all I got to do is say Polozola. And then we are off to the races. So, and he did want to write a book that gave his point of view, and Lord knows, I mean, he may outlive all of us, and he may still write that book. But he wants to give his perspective and point of view of being in that courtroom and about being at the bad end of that trial. He feels like that there's a lot that people need to know about sometimes how unjustified justice can be. And I don't blame him for that. But by the same token, I think we covered it at the end of the biography in detail, footnoted, and attributed. And so, therefore, it's as factual as it's going to be without everybody running to that 3,000-page transcript and going through it themselves.
Well, and is there a market for that?
Right. No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
And plus, there's a lot we should know about the court system. But I think the 10th Circuit Court of Appeal, which is part of my research, the 10th Circuit Court being in Denver, at one point, they ruled that bartered testimony was tantamount to lying and that should not be used. And they were overruled by the Supreme Court because, as I understand it, as I remember those particular cases, law enforcement came to the Supreme Court or appealed to the justices and said, if you take this right away from us to sort of bend the rules a little bit, mm-hmm. we'll never be able to get the bad guys who don't play by the rules at all. And I can understand that argument.
Well, has the governor taken delight in the foibles of his prosecutor, Jim Letton?
Well, delight only in the sense that, once again, that whole office in New Orleans was exposed for the kind of clientele that they, or the kind of personnel that they had. First off, it was Eddie Jordan. Eddie Jordan became the attorney, district attorney down there, and just exploded himself, exploded the office by showing himself to be the most extreme kind of racist. And then, then Jim Letton, of course, came in behind him. And Jim Letton, let's face it, when Jim Letton allowed his transcript, and I've wanted to talk to him about this, but obviously he doesn't want to talk. When he allowed his transcript into the jury room, after Judge Polozola had said, every copy that goes into there, this transcript's got to be pristine. That was automatically, in my opinion, grounds for mistrial. Well, was it? And it wasn't overturned by the Fifth Circuit either.
No.
So.
It was not. 297-5633 as we move along with Leo Honeycutt. Next up is slated to be John Kennedy, our state treasurer. Now, the governor's brother, Marion, died a few days ago, age 84. He'd had liver cancer for 35 years, obviously a resilient man. And like any brothers, they had some ups and downs, didn't they?
Well, of course they did. I mean, all siblings are going to have some ups and downs. And I think that later in their adult life, I think Marion Edwards probably did not enjoy always being in the shadow of his older brother, older by only 11 months. I began to know the family intimately, but Marion really owed a lot to Edwin, because Edwin is the one who put him through college, Edwin housed him when he had no place to go. Edwin set him up in business. So when it came time to run for statewide offices, Marion very diligently and adeptly ran his campaigns. I mean, that Paris trip was started out to be a farce, looked like a farce from the outside, and turned out to be one of the greatest strokes in history. I mean, even President Ronald Reagan commented that, gee, I wish we'd thought of that.
Well, remember that touching scene with Edwin and Marion embracing each other after the death of their brother, Nolan? That's almost 30 years ago.
God, it's hard to believe. 1983, you're right. Wow.
You remember the day, don't you?
August 16th. It was in the heat of the August. Right smack in the middle of that campaign between he and Dave Treen. And Nolan, the governor has told me that he was probably closest to anyone on the face of the earth was probably Nolan. He and Nolan probably were more in tune with each other and more akin than anybody else that was in Edwin's family. And, of course, now Governor Edwards is the last Edwards standing.
Well, and Nolan, of course, died tragically, for those who don't know the story. It's 30 years old, but he was in his law office early one morning. And
Bubba Wingate, one of his clients, came in and strangely, even though he was holding a gun in his pocket, he sat patiently and waited for his appointment.
And then went in and killed Nolan
Edwards. And then went in without words, shot him twice in the face with a .45, and then turned the gun on himself.
And Edwin Edwards ended up winning that election, but it was a bittersweet win because of what had happened along the way.
And you remember one of the key issues in that election was pardons.
Yeah, and this guy had gotten a pardon from Edwin Edwards.
That's right. He had gotten a pardon from Edwin Edwards.
And then killed Edwards' brother.
Right.
And Dave Treen, of course, was using that as an issue in the campaign. And at that time, I was doing a newscast for the Louisiana Radio Network, and I remember we got the story, we went with it, we went on the air, and I hit the spot. In those days, manually everything had to be done. And sure enough, it's a spot from Dave Treen attacking Edwin Edwards on pardons.
Wow. And then, yeah, they pulled those spots
immediately after that particular newscast. But and of course Treen, you know, he had nothing to do with the timing, it's just the way it happened. It took that issue off the table.
Yes, it did. And Edwin Edwards has been quoted repeatedly as saying that, you know, there's no way to know. And he said when I was in office and was, he said he would always take the recommendation of the pardon board. And if the pardon board had examined all the information and they felt that a person had been rehabilitated and should be released, then he would sign it. But he said, you never knew. You know, when you signed it, you never knew what the real repercussions were going to be. And, of course, for it to come straight to his own house in the form of the death of his brother, I think that really sort of that pushed something in him over the edge.
Okay. Well, Leo Honeycutt is a busy man, a prolific writer. In fact, the Edwin Edwards book, most of it is on the cutting room floor, isn't it?
Yeah, two-thirds of it. You know, we had to cut it down by two-thirds. I spent about 2 years trying to chop the thing down and hone it because nobody's really going to read much more than 600 pages, even on Edwin Edwards. So, but I do have 1,200 more pages, and they are some of it's incendiary. And so that's why I do have it locked up, locked in a way in a safe deposit box at an undisclosed location. So should anything happen to me, Jim, and you report that, then that will be the first place police will go.
Well, and you've written about other people, most recently, Jerry Lane.
That is a fascinating story by itself. Jerry Lane's story from truly from rags to riches and from the Dust Bowl. You know, they're going to give this book to the graduates, I think, at Southern and LSU, the business graduates for graduation. But it is truly a story that if a younger person especially could grasp the concept of perseverance, then they can do anything. Literally, a person only is guided by his beliefs. And if he believes he can't do it, he can't. If he believes he can. And it's not anything to do with money or timing. A lot of people want to believe that, but it's really not. In his case, in Jerry Lane's case, he said, I was the most ill-timed person in the world. Every time I opened up a new business, a hurricane hit. When I was born was right after the stock market crash, right in the middle of the Depression. And he said, and then the Dust Bowl came and blew away everything that we had as far as crops go. So he says, I literally started from nothing.
What's an amazing story detailed in Leo Honeycutt's latest book. Thank you, Leo. And we'll return with John Kennedy after this 90-second timeline.
Thanks, Jim.
This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. And our guest now is State Treasurer John Neely Kennedy, who is, of course, surveying the landscape. And right now it looks like the landscape may change as far as taxes. And this is something that Treasurer Kennedy knows well as the former Secretary of the Department of Revenue and the man who counts the beans as we know them in state government. Good morning to you, John Kennedy.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for having me, and Happy New Year.
Well, Happy New Year to you. Well, the governor's proposal apparently will abolish the state income tax, perhaps also take away most corporate taxes. How will this work?
I first want to thank the governor for originating this discussion. Every government ought to strive for a tax code that looks like somebody designed it on purpose, so this is an important discussion. I would love to get rid of income taxes. I would also love to be able to buy a new bass boat. But that, you know, it all depends on my budget. How's it going to work? So there are a lot of questions about the governor's proposal. He's going to strive appropriately for tax neutrality. But even within those parameters, that still doesn't mean that we won't have winners and losers. We will. The median household income in Louisiana is about $42,000 a year. So the first question would be, will the median household pay more or less? How about if you're above the median? How about if you're below? Income taxes bring in about $2.9 billion a year. Our current 4-cent sales tax brings in about $2.6 billion. Do the math. Will 3% increase be enough to fill the hole? The governor's proposing to tax some products that aren't currently taxed. Which ones? The governor's proposing to tax services that we don't currently tax. Which ones? Many local governments, as you well know, levy a sales tax, some as much as 5%. With a state and local sales tax of, let's say, 12%, how will that impact consumer behavior? Is it going to encourage cross-border shopping? Is it going to send people to Mississippi and Texas when they want to buy a big-ticket item? Or more likely, is it going to move them toward the Internet? If we swap income taxes for sales taxes, how can we be certain that a future legislature won't double back and reimpose the income tax? What will be the impact on the movie industry? The movie industry is very promising in Louisiana. We subsidize it with a state income tax credit. What happens if there's no income tax to credit? What will be the impact on the tourism industry? Will this new tax code make Louisiana more or less attractive to retirees? Lots of questions, lots of moving parts. Thanks to the governor for originating the discussion, but we need to see the bill and we need to see the backup data.
297-5633. Or 877-217-5757 for Treasurer John Kennedy. Mike in Sherwood Forest. Mike, good morning. You're on the air with Treasurer Kennedy.
Mr. Kennedy, I have two quick questions. The first one is just sort of rhetorical. Alaska, at least in the past, has used its resource taxes, royalties, et cetera, to actually pay their government budget and give their state citizens an annual check.
Yes.
It amazes me that in the face of a tax problem, the drum banging is about reducing government spending as opposed to looking for other revenues. And income tax or any other tax is only part of the solution. If you're talking about just a 3% problem, it doesn't seem like it's a big deal. Solve it. Do you agree with that? And then B, a sales tax is regressive. Period. its only benefit is its simplicity.
All right. Would you respond, Treasurer?
Alaska has a lot of oil and gas and not a lot of people. That's why Alaska can afford to give money back to people. That's point one. Point two, your spending question is a very good one. Louisiana currently ranks number nine in America in state and local revenue per capita. It might be appropriate to ask whether we could reduce income taxes without raising sales taxes by wasting less. Eliminate some of the state's 19,000 consulting contracts. Reduce the annual 900,000 taxpayer-funded visits to emergency rooms for routine care. Make the bureaucracy less top-heavy. Point three, the governor has said, and I will have to evaluate whether he's correct or incorrect, that his new tax code will not be regressive because he is going to exempt or continue the current exemption for food, utilities, prescription drugs from the sales tax. I'll tell you one thing his tax proposal will do, which is a positive in my opinion. We have a huge cash economy in Louisiana. Some of our workers are paid with hard-to-trace cash, and they don't pay income tax. That's not fair. You can avoid an income tax by not filing and hoping you're not caught. You can't avoid a sales tax unless you don't just choose not to buy things. So that's a plus. The negative is, you know, if you're talking about a 12, 13, some people have said as high as 14% sales tax, that's going to have an impact on consumer behavior. In some cases it may be positive, but in some cases it may be negative. And my point is, you don't want to just leap off this cliff and then hope the water is deep enough that you survive. You want to test the water before you leap, and we need a lot of details. But the governor should, in my opinion, should be congratulated, not criticized, for originating this discussion. It's an important discussion to have.
Andy on Goodwood. Andy, good morning. You're on with John Kennedy.
Good morning, gentlemen. I have a couple of questions. One is, how do you forecast sales taxes? When things are slow, people aren't buying anything. When things are good, people are buying stuff. And the second question I have is, most big-ticket items like cars, appliances, tires, you know, stuff like that, people finance that stuff. So they're just financing more taxes. That's not good for the middle class or the lower income folks. How would they, I guess, and the other thing is, how would they forecast a sales tax? I mean, it seemed like if you're trying to forecast this year, what about 3 years from now? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Andy.
All good questions. For planning purposes, we need to ask whether the new tax code will be more or less volatile, whether it'll be easier or harder to administer, whether it'll be easier or harder to estimate the revenue. But at the end of the day, Andy, look, every state in America relies primarily on one or more of three taxes: income, sales, and property. And none is perfect, and none is pleasant. It's basically a case of picking your poison and then trying to achieve fairness by keeping rates low and the base broad. Now, if you change your tax system in the middle of your economy, as the governor's proposing to do, you may be able, with sufficient amount of research and time, to change it for the better. But you've got to spend a lot of time thinking about the consequences, both intended and unintended. And that's why I say I thank the governor for raising this issue. We need to have a full and fair and transparent debate. We need to see the bill.
Now, you were involved in a tax reform attempt in 1989?
Yes.
When you were the lead counsel for Governor Romer. So that's 24 years ago. That one went to a vote of the people. Should something like this go to a vote of the people?
Well, it will ultimately if because what the governor's proposing to do is really change the Constitution.
He can't do this without it being a constitutional amendment.
I don't think so, Jim. I mean, he may disagree with that, but our state income tax is in our Constitution. And I think all of this takes even if you can avoid changing the Constitution, it all takes a two-thirds vote. But if it is something extraordinarily fundamental and different, I think you can make a persuasive argument that people ought to get to vote on it.
Well, and as you know, it's tough to get people to vote for tax changes.
Yes, it is.
Yes, as it is. Was in 1989.
Yes, it was. It's something, I mean, nobody likes to pay taxes, but it's the price we pay to live in a reasonably civilized society. We have certain needs, and like schools and roads and fire protection and police protection and levies, and we have to have a reasonable amount of revenue to fund government.
Well, it would seem that if this plan is proposed and the legislature weighs the merits of it and maybe votes for it, it's still full of minefields, mainly the fact that it still has to go to a vote of the people, according to you.
Well, yes, and now there may be a way to craft the bill so it doesn't, but all I'm saying is that our personal income tax rates and our personal income tax is in the Constitution. At a minimum, it's going to take a two-thirds vote to do a great deal of this. And I think a two-thirds vote is achievable for the governor. I think he's going to have to get personally involved. I think he's going to have to be willing to come on the Jim Inkster Show and other popular shows and answer questions.
I like that. But my goodness, if it didn't go to a vote of the people, then we got people heading to the courtroom to challenge it.
That wouldn't surprise me. Any kind of radical, dramatic change, I don't mean radical in a pejorative sense, dramatic change in your tax code is always going to attract litigation.
297-5633, still time to talk with Treasurer John Kennedy. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Phil, you're on with Treasurer Kennedy.
Good morning, gentlemen. First off, Mr. Kennedy, I just want to thank you for volunteering to go teach in our schools. I think that's an excellent thing to do, and I would urge other people and our legislators to do that as well. It's a very good thing, and I applaud you for doing that. My question to you is just in terms of taxes, I mean, right now, depending on the parish where you spend your money, I think it's about 8% tax, sales tax in Baton Rouge Parish, and maybe 10% in Orleans, you know, and there's the hotel taxes. There's all kind of little taxes that parishes are, put in to try to raise revenue. And if our property taxes are not going to go up, because I don't see the homestead exemption going away, I mean, where is the revenue going to come from to have services? And what about privatizing? I mean, do you support the privatization that the governor's been doing?
All good questions. Let me just say on the substitute teaching, no person in government who makes policy for elementary and secondary education ought to be allowed to do it until they've substitute taught. And I don't mean going to a civics class for 10 minutes. Go be a real teacher for a day. It's a lot different world. Number two, the privatization. I support privatization when it can be demonstrated that the private sector can do it better and or cheaper than government. But I don't worship at the altar of privatization for privatization's sake. There are some things that we can do cheaper and better within the government. So it just depends on the service or product you're trying to deliver. You know, all the tax code, there's no free lunch, there's no perfect tax. I'll say it again. I would love to be able to get rid of the income taxes. Texas, Florida, with which we compete, they don't have income taxes. It's a major selling point for attracting people to the state. But the devil's in the details, and sales tax is a big part of our system. Look, America's a consumer-driven economy. 70% of the economic activity in America is driven by consumers. So if you're going to do something to impact or change consumer behavior, you want to think it through first, and that's all I'm saying.
Tammy on Airline. Tammy, you're on with John Kennedy.
Yes, Mr. Kennedy, this is Tammy Weaver. I was an attorney that worked for you at the Department of Revenue in the 90s.
Yes, hi, Tammy.
I'm sure if you remember.
Yes.
I have a question with the sales tax. If you remember, we had a ton of officer liability suits with uncollected, well, collected sales tax that were not remitted.
Yes.
And those corporations generally go out of business, and the people are all bankrupt, and those taxes are not collected. Income tax was a part of that, but if I remember right, the sales taxes were just grossly disproportionate in terms of what was uncollected.
Yes.
And how would that be affected with the state's income basis if we were to switch to only sales tax?
Great question. As Tammy points out, it's been known to happen that a business will collect sales taxes, and for whatever reason, maybe it went broke, maybe it just kept the money, didn't turn the money, excuse me, over to the state. So you've got to ask, how often does that happen? How much more will it happen if you rely more on a sales tax? How will it impact your cash flow? You've also got to ask the question, look, if you raise personal or rather state sales taxes, let's say 12%, part state, part local, How are folks going to feel when local government asks folks to renew, not pass a new, but renew an existing sales tax, let's say for our schools? You have to ask the question, well, are people going to say, wow, you know, I'm already paying 12%, therefore I'm going to be less likely to vote for a sales tax renewal. Now, maybe that's the right thing to do, but the point is, it's going to impact local government, so you need to think that through carefully as well.
Mike in Port Allen. Hi, Mike. You're on with John Kennedy.
Yes, good morning. Jim, you've outdid yourself today. I have a compliment and a question. I voted for this guy, Mr. Kennedy, and I want to say he's one of Louisiana's true servants. And I want to say one more other thing. Keep the facts like you got them. It's always put the facts where they go. Put them in his face and let America know what's going on. Let Louisiana know what's going on. I'm really proud of the way you serve our state. My question is, what about the people that's on fixed income? How do you think that 4% sales tax is going to affect them?
All right. Thank you.
Well, first, thanks for the kind words. I really do appreciate that. If you're on a fixed income and you don't pay much income tax, you could be a loser under this system. That's why I say I'd like to see us take our median income for median household income in Louisiana today, according to the Census Bureau, is $41,734. Let's see how the median household will be impacted, and then let's look in reasonable increments, everybody above the median and everybody below, let's say in $10,000 increments. So we'll all be able to evaluate in a transparent way who the winners and losers are going to be. And then once we know the immediate impact, let's try to put our thinking caps on and imagine how this will impact the Louisiana economy and therefore Louisiana tax revenue and therefore Louisiana schools and roads, et cetera, in the future. Now, none of us are clairvoyant. We can't predict the future, but we can certainly think this through. The governor's idea is very provocative, but we need details.
297-5633. We'll be back in 90 seconds with John Kennedy. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. A few more minutes with Treasurer John Kennedy, who is surveying the landscape involving tax reform, and Governor Jindal has embarked on an ambitious course of action here. In the second year of his second term, he is proposing to do away with the state income tax, perhaps do away with corporate taxes, and shift the burden to sales taxes. Are you surprised at all that the governor is doing it at this time, Treasurer Kennedy?
No, I'm not, Jim. Now's the time. I mean, he's in the second year of his second term. As you know better than I do, because you're an astute observer of politics, at some point in your second term, your power starts to wane as you become more lame duck. So if he's going to do it, now's the time. And look, I'm glad to have the debate. I think People need to know more about how they pay their taxes and why they pay them and what they pay. And this is a good thing, but I don't want to see us try to rush something through. It's just too dangerous.
Ethel at the Capitol, please be brief. Ethel, you're on with Treasurer Kennedy.
Yes, I'd just like to say he just told the previous caller on a fixed income that he would likely be a loser with a sales tax rather than income tax. And most people who study, you know, the effects of policies on the poor do agree that if sales taxes take a greater part of the income of the poor, they have less to spare, and it makes things difficult for them. So how do you feel about that?
It depends on how much your fixed income is. If you've got a fixed income of $150,000 a year, you may be better off without an income tax. If you're on a fixed income of $20,000 a year and don't pay any income tax right now, then obviously by paying more in sales tax, you'll be personally less well off. So that's why I say they're going to be winners and they're going to be losers. And the proper, fair way to do this is to have a transparent process so everybody can determine whether they're going to win or lose. Now, if you lose, you still might be willing to support the new system because you think it'll be better for Louisiana. But everybody needs to have the facts.
Now, early on in our conversation, you mentioned that $42,000 is the median income in Louisiana.
Yes.
And if somebody's at that level, do they stand to pay more taxes or less taxes?
I don't know, Jim. And by the way, that $42,000 is for a household. I don't know because we haven't seen the bill. We have we just have the concept. The concept is simple. Get rid of income taxes on people and companies. Instead, raise the state sales tax by 3%. Start taxing some products. We don't know which ones they are that we don't tax now. And start taxing services. And that's about all we know right now.
Well, we look forward to following the discussion with you, and I would imagine your input on this will be vital.
Well, I'm going to offer it. I don't know how vital it will be, but or how welcome it will be, but I'm going to offer it.
Well, I think it is vital. Whether it will be welcomed, I don't know. It depends on where you come down. If you're against what the governor is proposing, then I don't think it will be received well, but you have an open mind, don't you?
I do. I have a completely open mind, and once again, I thank Bobby for doing this. I think it's an important discussion to have.
Well, thank you, Treasurer Kennedy. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Jim.
Take care. And we're joined in studio now by the man who is in charge of the Jewish Film Festival, taking the mantle from the late, great Harvey Hoffman. Good morning to you, Ara Rubian.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Well, good to see you and hear you again. And this was founded in 2007.
That was the first year.
And it's become quite a part of our community, or early part of the year. And
yes,
Harvey used to make annual appearances here.
We miss
him. And we miss him a lot. But I'm sure he would be very pleased with the films that will be on display in the next few days.
We're doing something a little bit different this year now that you talk about Harvey. This is the first year that the festival has actually helped fund one of the films that's showing. Saturday night, the 19th, we're showing a film called Hava Nagila, the movie. And it was a film that I found out about when it was in post-production. Roberta Grossman is the producer and director, and I had gotten an email from her basically saying, help us finish our film. We looked at the 10-minute trailer and were knocked out by it. In fact, we were a little concerned. I called her on the phone and said, you know, how much better can the entire film be than the trailer? Because a lot of times the trailers pack all the good stuff in there. She said, you know what? Let me send you the DVD, the rough cut. You tell me. We looked at it and we liked it even better. So the Manship Theater had established something called the Harvey Hoffman Film Fellowship Fund last year. And people had made some donations to it with the idea that it would help fund a film like this. Well, we went back and forth with the filmmaker and the Manship and some of our donors. And long story short, we'll be in the closing credits of the film as being one of the, hopefully, one of the bigger, heavier hitters for the film. And we're just thrilled that it comes to the Manship. And we're only sorry that Harvey won't be here to see it. He would have loved it.
Five films over 4 days and nights starting tonight. What's on display this evening?
Tonight is a terrific film. It's a historical documentary about the life and times of Yoni Netanyahu. The older brother of Bibi Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, tells the story of his life. He was kind of a warrior poet, but it also tells the story of the famous raid on Entebbe by the equivalent of SEAL Team 6. This was 35 years ago, July 4th, 1976. Thrilling story. If you read it in a novel, you'd say it's unbelievable.
And then tomorrow, something called Torn.
Torn. Again, a documentary about a Polish Catholic priest who, as he's sitting by his mother's deathbed, is told by her that he was given up for adoption by his Jewish parents shortly before they were taken away to the concentration camps, raised as a Catholic, becomes a Catholic priest, and then discovers that he's Jewish and wants to now move to Israel and live on an Orthodox kibbutz. And it's a difficult transition, and this tells his story.
And then Saturday, another film. Usually that's your big night, but yep. Well, tell us about this one.
That is Hava Nagila, the movie. It tells the history of what some people say is the most recognizable piece of music in the world. It started out as a wordless melody because among the Hasidic Jews, it was felt that in order to reach God, words would not suffice. They believe that there are 10 levels of prayer. Above that is music. And then, of course, you know, flash forward to the 50s. It becomes a cultural artifact. And then Harry Belafonte sings it on stage at Carnegie Hall, and it just goes viral. And the film goes beyond that and has interviews with people like Regina Spektor, Harry Belafonte, Glenn Campbell, Connie Francis. It's just, to me, it's the feel-good film of
and
the
Leonard
festival.
And Leonard Nimoy.
And Leonard Nimoy, yes. It's the feel-good film of the festival.
And then Sunday, you have two films.
We have two films.
1 o'clock, one
yes.
at 4 o'clock.
Actually, 3:30. Both are what I would call films about family. The first one is for maybe a younger audience. It is about a couple of 12-year-old girls who become best friends. One is a new immigrant from Israel to America. The other is a Vietnamese immigrant who has been there for several years, and they share and become friends. It's a very nice, warm, sweet film. The afternoon film at 3:30 is called Footnote, which I really think is the sleeper hit of the festival. It was the best screenplay at Cannes a year ago and also nominated for best foreign film at last year's Oscars. It is a dark comedy, kind of almost a Hitchcock sort of a film. Wonderful, terrific story about a father-son team of scholars who are in competition. A lot of twists and turns, very funny, very dark. It might be the sleeper hit of the festival.
Seventh year of the film festival, and Ara Rubion is the son-in-law of Harvey Hoffman, the man who was the inspiration behind the original concept in the first few years. He was here for five of the seven?
Yep.
And your wife is a voice we hear occasionally on
Julie.
WRKF.
That's right.
Right.
She at 24/7, you can turn on the radio anytime. You will hear Julie on the radio.
Julie, who at one time was the news person in middays mm-hmm. and has a beautiful voice. And you and Julie actually choose the films, don't you?
Yes, we do. I have said that is the second hardest thing about doing the festival. The first hardest is deciding which of the terrific films will not get one of the five slots that we have. And so we pick the films. We have a committee that kind of looks over our shoulder and kind of ratifies and, in fact, says, yes, these are terrific films.
That's well, how many choices were there to get to the
to
five?
To get to the five? Probably 50, I'd say.
So about 1 out of 10.
1 out of 10, and it's a hard choice sometimes.
And the festival is gaining momentum. It's something people look forward to.
Yep.
I would imagine you envision this going on and perhaps getting bigger.
Well, as a matter of fact, we are researching and implementing new ways, building our audience. We do have a Facebook page. We've got over 800 Facebook fans, most of whom are in the Baton Rouge, New Orleans, Lafayette area. we're continuing to, you know, reach out in the community. We've got very loyal patrons and donors without whom none of this would be possible. And let me add, before we run out of time, tickets are still available. You can get them online at brjff.com/tickets.
And I've gotten a question, and actually this is not a whimsical inquiry. You don't have to be Jewish to go to the Jewish Film Festival.
Absolutely not. We don't get into that. What I will say is this, because I've given it a lot of thought. What makes a film Jewish is also what makes it universally appealing. These are stories about history, family, religion, culture, the arts, that, yes, are based in Jewish culture and history, but we pick films that are inspirational, but more importantly, show that we're all in this thing together, and mm-hmm. that by sharing these ideas, you'll see we're all the same.
And you're a relative newcomer to Baton Rouge.
I am. I moved down here 8 years ago. I have to give a shout-out to you for having Denny McClain on your show so many times. I grew up in the 60s in Detroit, and he is a hero of mine. And I'm so glad that he's doing terrific.
Well, he's a guy who's had a full life.
He has definitely had a full life.
But, boy, can he talk.
He can, and he sounds great.
Yeah, he sounds great, and thank you. But you grew up in Detroit in the 1960s.
In the 60s,
so you remember 1968.
Absolutely.
The Detroit Tigers.
I calculated Al Kaline's batting average every day. And that's how much I was into it.
Yeah, you know, I used to do the same sort of thing with my Philly favorites. Uh-huh. And now, you know, that it's done instantaneously online. It's not as fun anymore.
No, it's not.
I used to like doing it myself, and it's like I had proprietary information at my disposal.
He's your guy.
Al Kaline.
Yeah.
But you know who taught Denny McClain how to throw a curveball?
No.
Jim Bunning.
Okay. I'll believe that. Bunning was a Tiger.
Yeah, that's right. And then he became a Philly.
That's right.
That's right. Well, we look forward to the Jewish Film Festival starting tonight, 7 p.m.
Bundle up. Come down to the Manship Theater.
And the first offering is Follow Me. And it is about a man whose last name is synonymous with Israel.
Right. Yoni Netanyahu.
And it is an amazing story. And then it continues Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday. And if you'd like more information, you may call the Manship Theater at 866-451-2787. 866-451-2787. Thank you.
All Thank right. you, Jim.
And now we're joined by Bobby Robertson, who is here to talk about the pre-K program that involves the school system here, and this is the paloozas that we've discussed before on this show, and this is a big time of the year for you.
Good morning. Yes, it is. This is the beginning of our pre-K roundup. It means rounding up the four-year-olds for the EBR school system. So our kickoffs are two paloozas, and that's when we connect the community to early childhood resources within this parish. And the first one is at Katana Mall from 10 to 2 on Saturday, January 19th. The second one will be at Woodlawn Middle from 4 to 6 on the 23rd. And the thing about these paloozas is that we will be giving out applications at that time that parents can complete and take to their school of preference.
And these children that are participating, they are, once again, they're very young people.
They're very young. They have to be 4 by September 30th of every year. And the pre-K program is different from the K-12 because K-12 money is a part of MFP, and it's going to come. Pre-K is on grants. And unfortunately, there isn't enough money for the number of four-year-olds in the parish.
And now, once again, as we talked about the Jewish Film Festival, this is something that you've been doing for a few years.
Oh, yes. This is my 8th year as preschool director and as an educator, number 43.
Bobby Robertson, the pre-K program, the Palooza, starting this Saturday, the 19th, Cortana. And what are the times again?
Well, Saturday from 10 to 2, at Katana, and on Wednesday, the 23rd, from 4 to 6. One other thing I'd like to say.
That one is at Woodlawn, right?
At Woodlawn Middle. It's different this year. The previous year, we did the lottery. But this year, we are hoping to improve our school system by change. And the change involves screening all of the applicants for the greatest academic need. And we will take the greatest academic need into our preschool program at our schools and our centers.
All right. So how do people contact you?
They can contact me at the Wyandotte Pre-K Center at 225-355-6197. Or call the EBR school system. That's right, for Bobby.
But 355-6197.
Yes.
225-355-6197.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Bobby Robertson. Good to visit with you, and good luck with the pre-K Paloozas Saturday the 19th. That's this Saturday, 10 to 2 at Cortana, followed closely on the 23rd next week, week from today, Woodlawn Middle, 4 to 6. That's it for today. Stay tuned.
Thank Podcasts you. Of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.